This episode of Developing Courage is brought to you by Minds in Motion. If you and your family are struggling with the development of one or more children, find out about their four-quadrant program for kids K-12 at mimlearning.com.
Welcome back to Developing Courage. We are glad to have you with us. I am Lauren Thomas.
I'm Kara Vonderhyde.
And we took a little bit of a hiatus over the summer because we both have kids and we're very, very busy. But we are excited to be back in the studio, and we are excited about who we have in the studio today.
Yeah, and we took a little break through the fall.
Oh, we took a break through the fall, too.
You had somebody at home that got really mobile, right?
Yes.
So that kept you busy.
Yes, I have three kids, one of which is two, and she is crazy mobile around the house and busy. And I have an 11-year-old that played football in the fall. So it was just a busy season, but we're back. It's 2015. We're ready to go.
Everybody's moving in different directions at our house, much like your house. But we missed it. You know, I have to say, I'm a numbers girl. I like to see how many of you out there are listening. And as of right this minute, there are over, you know, we've had about 2,700 downloads. So people are still listening, even though we haven't, we've slacked off on the recording a little bit in recent months. And that's awesome.
It is awesome. We appreciate it.
That is the beauty of the podcast format. You can listen where you want and when you want, whenever you want. We are also on Facebook and have a Facebook page. And you can find us on Twitter and follow us at KYKidOT, that's me, and at KYKidPT, that's Lauren. So we'd love to tell you about a program called Minds in Motion really quick.
Minds in Motion is our new sponsor, and we are really excited to have them on board. Candace Meyer has created an amazing program to help both children and adults that are struggling with attention or with their learning, and she incorporates movement into what she does, which is something that Kara and I truly believe in.
Right. Whether you are child or adult, if you have been developing typically, or if you've run into some sort of challenge with development, either way, we can all benefit from moving more. I think it's how the body was designed to be. And if you think about it, you know, it wasn't that many generations ago when we were all farmers, you know, out hauling things and moving around all day. And now we live this lifestyle where we're in front of screens a lot. Our kids are sitting in desks all day. And while there are certainly benefits, you know, to some of the ways that we live, we can safely say we all need to get out there and move a little bit more.
So we encourage you to go to mindsinmotionlearning.com. It's mimlearning.com, and make sure you enter the promo code podcast and get an assessment for your child or for you.
So right now on their way in the studio are Sarah Santo, who's an occupational therapist, and her canine companion currently in training, a dog named Freedom. And I have had the pleasure of following Sarah and Freedom's adventures on her Facebook feed. And this is just the most magnificent looking dog you've ever seen. And she's going to tell us more about the training process, who the canine assistants can help. And we look forward to that.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the studio. We have Sarah Santo in today, and we are really excited to have her in the studio. Sarah is an occupational therapist by trade, but we have her in today because she works training animals, assistance animals. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
That's kind of my dream job, too. When I retire, that's what I envision myself doing. I'm a dog lover.
Yes. And she brought along her canine companion today named Freedom, who's hanging out in the studio. So we get really doubly blessed today.
Yes. I'm having a very hard time not petting her because she still has her working vest on. So I'm not allowed. Maybe at the end,
if you're good. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with this organization and your background.
Well, I did get involved through my job as an occupational therapist. I had a little guy that I was seeing for therapy who had sensory processing disorders and probably some spectrum-like difficulties. And he had some social-emotional things going on at that time. And I want to say he was probably five and would come home to his mom and tell him, you know, I don't really know why I'm here. Nobody likes me. that kind of stuff. And so being this kind of kick butt mom that she is, she went out there and tried to find some things for her, and she got involved with Paws with Purpose, and he was actually placed with a home placement dog. And we can talk later about what those kind of things mean, but he got a friend through them. And then we as therapists said, hey, it would be really cool if we just had a dog once a month, just come out and hang out with the kids. And it's great training for the dogs and that kind of stuff. And then they came and brought this dog that didn't have a house yet. And I think they set us up. So that was all she wrote. That was probably 6 years ago. So
that dog came home with you.
That dog eventually got placed with me as a therapist, as a facility dog. And so he came to work every day and did OT and PT and speech and with all the therapists there, and still works there.
As parents, we focus on the day-to-day development and well-being of our children. Minds in Motion can be your partner in struggles with hyperactivity, homework, frequent meltdowns, frustration, and other situations that are keeping your family from thriving. Get to mimlearning.com to read 10 signs of struggle and sign up to learn about their four-quadrant program for kids K through 12. Minds in Motion has locations in Louisville, Kentucky, and Carmel, Indiana. If your family is struggling with development of one or more children, contact Minds in Motion and start solving the problems today. mimlearning.com.
Remington, who is the animal that I was placed with originally, was a facility dog. So he was certified in a specific facility. So he went to work with me every day. He did his work, and then he came home and he got to be a dog at home. The Freedom, who I have with me today, is in training to be a personal assistance dog, a mobility assistance dog. So she is hopefully going to work with somebody who has mobility needs. So she does things like picking up dropped items, helping opening and closing doors, carrying small packages. She's working on being able to take off your shoes for you or the end of your coat if you can't quite have the range of motion to do that yourself. So she's really going to be certified to work with a person and go with that person everywhere they go. Whereas Remy, who was the facility dog that I worked with, was kind of certified in that one facility. So,
and what did Remy do when he was at work?
Remy did a lot of things. He is a very youthful black lab, and he enjoyed playing. So he would do the obstacle courses with the kids and have them, you know, he would lead them through the tunnels. And he actually got to the point where he would jump off the loft into the ball pit. The kids pulled him in the wagon for heavy work. We had some big clothes that they could practice buttoning up his back. He was very
so
sweet
fun.
And let them like practice brushing his teeth. And, you know, you got to be a certain kind of dog to let a 6 year old, you know, jab a toothbrush in your mouth. So
that's a nice tactile activity.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. How do they identify what dog is going to be a good fit for this program?
You know, Paws with Purpose is the organization that I work with, but service dogs in general really do have to have the right temperament in order to be a working dog. We have a lot of dogs that have had kind of career changes because they've started off in the program and then they didn't quite fit in one area, so that we try to find them a good fit for their career, because we want the dogs to be happy. We primarily work with labs and retrievers because they have that innate desire to work and to retrieve things. And so when you're working on a mobility assistance dog, you want that dog to want to bring things. You want it to be a happy dog. So we tend to work with those. They are, throughout the whole process, they're continuously monitored to see temperament issues, if they're having any sort of reactivity, which in other words, if they have some fearful things where they might lash out at people or other objects. We do training once a week with me. Our program is completely different because it's actually a collaborative effort between Paws with Purpose and the Kentucky Correctional Institution for Women. And so she is in training 24/7 at the women's prison. And then on the weekends, she gets she has a person like me who comes, picks her up and takes her out and kind of practices what they've learned. So they get to learn everything in isolation and we get to see how it works. And then we get to see, okay, when we add kids or when we add traffic or when we add those kind of things, is she going to react differently? Is she going to do differently? And at that point, if it's enough of an issue to be a problem, then they try to find either a released home for her where they just get adopted out, or a different career if that works out better.
So what are the pool of dogs that Paws with a Purpose might choose from? Do they come from breeders, or are they?
Because we are a fairly small organization, we definitely did start off a little bit more kind of buying some dogs or getting some donated and that kind of stuff. We've grown over the years, and we are working now with a couple of organizations who do some breeding. Actually, Freedom's Mom was one of our dogs in training. And the point of that is that for the most part, I would say, not without exact numbers, but probably only about 35 to 40% of service dogs actually make it all the way through the program.
Wow.
And so you really want to start off.
It's like therapy school.
It is. It is. And so it doesn't mean that those dogs don't obviously go on to be very loving dogs and that kind of stuff, but it just takes a special kind of dog. And so Remy was one that actually got a change of career. He was in the program to be a service dog, but he had a little bit of anxiety in new environments. And so they really wanted to find him one place that he could get comfortable with, as opposed to being a public access dog where he was going to have to be able to, you know, go to all the new stores, get on the buses, do whatever. He just didn't, he was a little anxious for those kind of things, but he's worked out fabulously where he's working now.
Super interesting. I mentioned that I'm a dog person, but for the people out there who aren't dog people, it may not be as obvious that certain breeds have certain jobs and certain instincts. You mentioned the golden retrievers and the labs. You know, they have this innate drive to fetch things.
Right.
But yet when they fetch them, they don't typically bear down on them, which is also a good skill to have that would lend itself to being a good assistant, I think. But the girls and I were watching the dog show, you know, over the holiday break or whenever the big dog show is on. And they were just fascinated as each working group came on, you know, about what all the dogs' different jobs were.
Right.
So that's so interesting, you know, for the Remington who had a lot of anxiety, for him to have just one place that he went to work instead of.
Exactly.
People are much the same, I think.
I think, and that's part of the reason why I think he was so good with all of our kids. I think he, you know, kind of recognized the fact that some of our kids were a little anxious about things, and he was super gentle with any of those kids. And obviously, if a kid had his severe difficulties with it, we don't have to use him as part of therapy. He has a crate there. He can hang out in his den and just hang out. We can go in another room. But for those who just wanted to kind of get to know it, a lot of times it was their first attempt at really interacting with an animal that was calm and not going to lash out and in control.
Mm-hmm. So. And it's also worth pointing out, I think, anytime you involve an animal in a therapeutic process, something a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of these kids have been dependent for so many things their whole life, and their interactions with the animal present, you know, that may be the first time that they've been able to care for another creature, another living being, you know, and do something for someone else.
Exactly.
The dog.
And that really happened with the little guy that I was talking about at the very beginning, kind of my first foray into this. He had a home placement dog named Faith, and he was responsible for her, and she was his friend, and she was not judgmental. You know, even if he was a little awkward at things, she didn't care. She loved him. She still does. He's now 14. I think. So much older. It's been a while, but he actually just got a new dog who is actually a full access service dog because things have gotten a little bit more difficult for him over the years. And so now he uses a dog that can help him out in public and to go to school with him, whereas Faith was a home placement dog. So she really wasn't certified to go out in public like you would see, you know, in the restaurants or that kind of stuff. But she just really stayed home with him and gave him that support there.
We should stop and do a Freedom report, because Freedom's being very quiet. She's taken a brilliant nap under the table, and now she has arisen.
Yes.
To have a little sniff.
And now she's getting cued to lay back down.
Did you hear the little moo that she just let out?
She somewhat sounds like a sullen teenager sometimes underneath the
talker?
Desk. She is. She humps, rolls over.
Our dog at home right now is a talker. I didn't, you know, meaning she... not barking, not yapping, but
just talking,
interacting for sure. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your training and the background. When you knew that you wanted to get involved with animal assistance therapy, where did you start? Or
I didn't actually know I was really interested in it until we had that interaction mm-hmm. With Pause with Purpose originally. And it turned out that of the therapists there, I was the most available to kind of be the primary handler for that dog. And then I started going through training to be his placement. And we did about 60 hours of training before he was able to be officially placed with me, starting with...
That was really your training, though.
That was my training.
60 hours. Okay.
Definitely my training. and part of that, most of that actually took place out at the Kentucky Correctional Institution for Women with Remy's inmate handler, who broke it down for me and showed me all the way down from things on how to trim his nails, all the way up to how to teach new behaviors and how to shape new behaviors, so that if we wanted to teach him something new, because all of the dogs are kind of started off at the same types of skills, and then they get to kind of grad school at the end and they kind of specialize in one thing or another. He was focused on the mobility stuff originally, and then when they knew he was going to go work with kids, she taught him things like the hokey pokey, and he turned himself around and did a little bow, and
I can't stand it.
It was super cute, and she taught him. I was there when she taught, and it took 15 minutes, and he got it. I mean, she's very good, and I have to give props to all the ladies that do that, and that in itself is such a huge part of our program. And as an OT, I'm very excited because it gives those women responsibility, things to be responsible for, also job skills. We have a number of them that are now released and have grooming skills, have training skills, all of those things that are really good. And from a OT perspective, the having that occupation, having that something in your life to kind of focus on, I think is really helpful.
Absolutely.
So do the puppies come at 12 weeks? When do they start their training?
Most of the puppies come in at about 8 weeks.
Okay.
We have... now, because like Freedom's mom, Yoko, was one of ours. And so I think they all came down at about 6 weeks, but with mom. And so she was one of 10. And for the first 2 weeks, all 10 of them were out at KCIW. So it was a little furball frenzy out there.
Do they have little vests when they're that?
They do actually have
tight. Oh, not,
I know. They put their first vests on at the very beginning. It's really all about just trying to get them used to things. It's socializing. And so it's walking over new surfaces and learning to potty on command and learning to, come when called and those kind of things. But they do have these tiny little vests and tiny little gentle leaders and, you know, that kind of stuff to learn when they're walking, walking nicely next to all those good behavior things.
Mm-hmm.
So, anytime anybody gets a placement, they're going to go through lots of love training. As a part-time weekend trainer, they take so good care of me because I did not have any dog training, experience.
Obedience training.
No. and in fact, I didn't have a dog growing up at all. I have a Chihuahua at home who is not nearly as well behaved as this one. But, we meet once a week and as a group, and they train us how to continue things with the dogs, which I think is really helpful. And it has overlaps between just regular behavioral therapy that you might use in other terms or with other people. But just learning that the nonverbals matter so much with dogs because they don't necessarily understand a lot of the words, definitely pick up your nonverbals, and they'll call me out on things like, oh, did you know you just shook your head that way, as you know, when you said heel as opposed to just saying heel, you also turned your hip. Because some of our clients aren't going to be able to have full control over hands or torso or those kind of things.
Right,
and so you
right.
really want to try to make sure that they are solid on their cues so that you don't have to do a lot of handling, or that person doesn't have to bend down to the ground to make sure that they go down with a treat in their hand. They should just be able to do it.
Right. So it's not just the dog learning that you're the boss as the current handler, but you are kind of mimicking some of the things that will be in the owner.
And that's what we have wheelchairs that we practice with, and we have, the ladies at KCIW have, all sorts of things. They have a cane, they have a refrigerator, they have light switches on the wall, all of those things that they might use to practice. And right now I have a tug at home on my refrigerator, a little fleece thing that she can open and close for me. I have one on the back of my office door, and she just goes around and she can open things for you and close it back up when you're done.
I'm going to resist asking if she can get a beverage for you out of the fridge.
She actually can. They teach them to go get
just
a bottle
like
of water.
Commercial.
But I'm sure that could be transferred to whatever beverage you would
like. No drinking on the job for you.
No drinking on the job.
Okay. So how long has Freedom been with you?
Freedom is 19 months now, and I got her when she was about, I think I picked her up the first time, about 10 weeks old. So we've been together for quite some time. And usually it's about a 2-year process for dogs to get trained. We're hoping midsummer for her, and we have 3 of her siblings that are still in the program. The other 6 have gone on to other programs. The great thing about working with other organizations is the fact that because we are so small, we can't really handle 10 puppies all at once, because it takes 2 years to train them. And if you were waiting that long, you would have no placements for so long. So we'd rather have 2 or 3 every 4 to 6 months, so that you have kind of a constant flow of people being ready to be placed. And so those other 6 have gone on. There's one in California. There's one in Pennsylvania. There's, you know, a couple in Indiana, and they're off doing their thing as well with other organizations. And so we're hoping right around 2 years old or so that they start to get placed. So I think actually in the next couple of weeks, she's due for her next round of kind of intensive evaluation, where she'll actually go with somebody else besides me and make sure that how she's doing, and kind of see her out in public and see if there's any issues and who she might be, what kind of a person she might be best with. Because we don't really, it's not a first come, first serve. We really are just like matching the dog with the right career. We really want to match the right dog with the right person. And so some are a little bit more rambunctious. Some are a little bit, you know, if you have somebody that's very active and is going to need to travel a lot and that kind of stuff, you're going to need a different dog than someone who, you know, might stay at home a little bit more, except for going out to church or, you know, the grocery store or something. So you just kind of have to kind of balance those things and make sure that you get the right dog for the right person.
So Freedom hasn't found the match for forever.
Not yet. No. And they really don't try to start. They don't match them from birth or anything. They really wait until they're finished with undergrad, basically, and then try to match them. And then that last time period is really focusing on the specialized skills for that person and starting the placement process, so that that person comes in and she works with her or him. And then they slowly start to wean things off. So we might do day trips. They might go to the mall. They might do this. Then they do a day at home and kind of wean their way into having this dog full time.
So for a dog that's being trained for mobility purposes like Freedom is, can you give some more, I guess, concrete examples of tasks that she may learn right at that end part where she's been matched
kind
to
of
a certain
the grad
person.
School part?
Yes, exactly.
You know, it really at that point, it depends on what that person needs. So if somebody were to be a fall risk, or we've had people with seizures, our dogs don't sniff out seizures,
yeah,
but they can respond to things. So if I fall down, they can be trained to go get a specific person. And so in the case of my young friend, who's now 14, he has a public access service dog now, who if something happens, that person is trained to go get mom. Like Lassie at the well will not give up until somebody, mm-hmm. You know, is coming back. And actually there's a story of one of our current placements where, his person had fallen in the vestibule between like at a Walgreens, like in between two things. And he, without even being asked, went and just harassed the cashier until they came over to help. And I think that that's one of the big things. We work specifically on their equipment. So we have one now that has a wheelchair, and Lauren, you might be better off at this, but it kind of folds back in the back in order for her to access things or get in differently. And that way it's super light, so she can kind of throw it back up in her car pretty easily. And that dog has now been trained to kind of click, the term is click it. And that dog goes with his nose and pushes and clicks the wheelchair back seat up for her in the back. So it really kind of, we might work on a general cane or a general wheelchair or that kind of stuff. But at that point, we really kind of individualize it for the person that's there.
And I think you said, but how long is that last little bit of training where it gets specific like that?
Usually 4 to 6 months at the most, I would guess. Obviously, it depends on, we had one that had some health concerns in the middle, where the person who was getting the dog had to take a couple weeks off to kind of get their health back to where it needed to be before they could kind of continue the placement. But we actually just placed 3 dogs at the end of December, so just in time for the end of the year. So there are three new dogs out with their people now.
I mean, that just is such a game changer for those people.
It really is.
Isn't it?
And we're about 11 years old or so. Our first batch of dogs are just at that point where they're retiring. So we do have a couple now that are their original dogs have retired. And we give preference to those who are getting a replacement dog on our list so that they can come back. And because, you know, labs only can really work for about 10 years. And especially if they're doing a very active work, you know, versus one that is not quite as active, they can probably go a little bit longer. Remy has a little bit more rein. He's not necessarily doing a lot of physical work if he doesn't want to, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, we can change the therapy around the things to as he ages, but you know, somebody at home who might be using them every day for pretty heavy work, those dogs are going to need their own retirement and their own time to kind of grow into their golden years, you know. So
they usually go somewhere else for their golden years, or they stay placed with the family?
Oh, they stay placed with the family.
I would
unless
think so.
For some reason the family can't manage them or something. Paws with Purpose, we actually maintain ownership of the dog throughout the process. So until they are released, like if they don't make it or that kind of stuff. But that's just a protection, just in case we need to, you know, if somebody's not taking care of the dog right or that kind of stuff. Because we do have, you know, a fairly intensive application process. We place the dogs completely free of charge. There's no charge for these dogs. And in, you know, some areas you can say that the training and the dog is worth $20,000 to $25,000 by the end of their 2 years worth of hardcore training. And we do home visits. We do, you have references. We have to talk to, if you have another dog, we have to talk to your vet to make sure that you're keeping up on all your vet stuff with your other dogs. And those kind of things, some personal interviews to make sure that we have the person that's going to take care of our dogs, because we love them and they are alive and they are, you know, they need somebody that's going to want them. And so usually they are very much a part of the family. And in fact, it's probably harder to get somebody to aware that their dog needs to retire. A lot of them, you know, it's really hard. That dog has been your right hand person or your right hand man for 8 or 9 years. That's really hard to go, like,
it's hard to separate with a dog, period.
Exactly. But usually at that point the dogs are like, I'm okay staying home, just let me, you know,
right,
let me relax. So
right, so you mentioned that Freedom is coming up on another big test.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like, you know, Paws with Purpose is our local, one of our local agencies. Are there agencies across the country that would have the same sort of, I don't know if there's accreditation standards or, but if
right.
some of these dogs are shipped off to California from you guys, it sounds like everybody's using the same handbook a little bit.
Yes. We are currently a candidate member for the Assistance Dogs International, and we're working on our accreditation through them. And they are definitely one, probably a gold standard for accreditation. And by being an accredited member of ADI, you just say that you're going to maintain these minimum standards, which are pretty intensive. And so a lot of those other places that we use are, in fact, also ADI members. And so our kind of mentor group in there is ICANN, which is out of Indianapolis. And they've helped us a lot. And they have a couple of our dogs and have helped us grow our program over the last couple of years. So ADI, and you can look them up on the internet for any sort of reference. If you are looking for an organization, they have a member list on there that you can search for based on location and type of need you have. So, you know, there are some organizations that primarily work with wounded warriors. There's some that work primarily with guide dogs for the blind. There are some that work with dogs for the deaf, those kind of things. And so our dogs, we're fairly small. We kind of stick to our niche. But our dogs are mobility assistance dogs for the most part.
Great. And we'll link that on our website so that people can easily find that resource. Okay, we're back. We had to take a little snack break. Well, we didn't have a snack, but Freedom had a snack. She woke up from her nap. She was taking another sweet little nap. She had one of her little flaps out on her paw. I'm keeping an eye on her just to give you guys a visual at home. And now she had a little snack. She feels better.
So, Sarah, you're an occupational therapist by training, but can anybody that's interested in this get involved with this
absolutely,
organization?
Absolutely. Okay. We have one PT that has worked with us, and I think she got involved because she actually was the PT at KCIW, which is the women's prison. But other than that, nobody is healthcare related. We have a lot of empty nesters or other people that just have a little bit of more time. We do have a couple of families that do it together as a family project, because we can have, you know, a family train a dog together. And it really does, if you are... if you're working, if you decide you want to be a part-time puppy trainer, which is our biggest need for people that want to do a part-time puppy trainer, whoever is at home needs to be consistent. And so it is a really great idea. You know, you're teaching your kids how to give back to the community, that volunteer aspect, which I think is really important for as young of an age as they can. But also the nonverbals, also the importance of communication, the importance of consistency. It's, I think, you know, they see it more in the dogs. And so they're maybe a little bit more willing to take the consistency on direction from parents, you know,
right.
Because it's that, these are the rules, you know, and if she's not doing it, you know, if Freedom doesn't respond to a cue that I say, I'm not going to yell at her. I'm not going to yank her leash or anything. We focus very much on the positive training. And so really, I'm going to ignore the behaviors that I don't like. And then once she finally does it, then I'm going to reward her for that. And so that's what I tend to carry a treat pouch with me. We're aiming on trying to decrease that. You know, when they're little bitty, you are, man, you're throwing those treats at them all the time. And they usually just use part of their food. So like Remy, who's working, we don't give him a whole lot of extra treats. But we just kind of, instead of 3 cups a day, he gets a cup in the morning, a cup in the evening, and then a cup worth of food throughout the day as reinforcers. Because that is pretty big. You want to make sure that your dogs are healthy. And when you're trying to train all these behaviors, they can very easily kind of lean over to that slightly overweight category, and that doesn't make for a happy dog either. But we're very positive, you know, and that's part of the thing that I had to learn was, it's kind of Super Nanny-esque, you know, if you ever saw that show, but it's just, you know, these are the behaviors I expect, and I'm going to take the emotions out of it. And if, you know, if your dog is jumping on you, well, then I'm just going to look at the ceiling and turn my back, and you don't get any attention from me. And as soon as four paws are on the ground, then I'll turn around.
This is sounding very familiar, but not because of dogs.
Yes,
right?
It might work sometimes with some kids too.
You expect them to do what you ask them to on the first try and not the third try.
Exactly. And it's really, you know, it is difficult to try to get them to get that understanding. But once they, our dogs want to work for us, you know, for the most part, they love it. And this one's a worker. She does better if she has something to do. She actually gets in more trouble if I just kind of leave her going on her own. But, she would rather, like, if we're in a store, I have a little wallet that she'll carry in her mouth throughout the whole store. She'll carry a grocery bag out for me and that kind of stuff. Just giving her something to do. You know, I think that goes over with kids as well, as like, you know, boredom kind of breeds trouble sometimes, you know, for having something to do.
Extra action. Yeah.
Exactly. It just makes it a little bit easier to kind of go with the flow. So.
And Freedom goes to work with you.
She does go to work with me. I teach right now at a local community college, and she goes to work with me, and she goes to class with me. And every time I walk in, the students, who are all adults, they say, but please, can we pet the dog? You know, and I have to go, you know, go back and forth and say, you know, she is a working dog. If she has her vest on, you're not allowed to pet her. But she is supposed to, she either is under my desk if I'm not teaching, just hanging out, or she's under a table at the front of the room while I'm lecturing in the classroom. So, you know, and I work PRN or as needed on the weekends at a nursing home, and she's come with me once or twice to that, and kind of done the therapy dog aspect. While our dogs are in training, we do try to do some of the therapy aspect, or more the visiting, you know, visiting aspect. So Remy still goes to Cosair and does some visits, and the rest of our dogs kind of rotate in at Fraser downtown, and they go and visit some people that are going through some pretty intensive training and pretty intensive therapy, and they just go and visit and, you know, let people cuddle on them, and at that point they get more opportunities to cuddle. But it's more, you know, we want to make sure that if they're gonna, you know, put their paws up on a bed, it's after I've told them to put their paws on a bed, not because they choose to jump up on the bed up on their own. So.
Right. I said before you got here, when we were recording the intro, that I follow your journey with Freedom on Facebook.
Yes.
Which I love, because both of you are just the cutest. But recently you guys took a road trip.
We did.
Not that long ago. And there was some trouble.
There was.
With the acceptance of bringing a dog everywhere.
Yes. You know, every the ADA The Americans with Disabilities Act allows for service dogs in public. It allows me to take my dog into any sort of public placement without issues for a place dog. The dogs in training is more of a state by state thing of how people handle it. I did go on the road. I went to a conference in New Orleans and decided to take her with me. So she was in the car with us for the 11-hour drive down there, and then stayed at the hotel and went to the conference with me all day. And it was an OT conference, so people were more accessible, open to having the service dogs there and that kind of stuff. And but we had one restaurant that chose not to let us sit there. And I had a copy of the law with me as an informed consumer. I do have a ID card in my bag. It is not a requirement that you have an ID card, and that's one of the difficult things. I understand both sides of the situation, but in the U.S., there is not a the laws are very vague, and it's to protect the people that are using the animals. But it doesn't require any sort of specific certification. It doesn't require a dog to wear a vest. It doesn't require a dog to have an ID card. It does require that the dog is a service dog and that it does an actual service. But people in the community can only say, is this your service dog? And what does it do for you? But they can't make that person show them that service or anything like that. And so people get a little confused over what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I think that this woman was not, it wasn't meant to be hurtful or anything. She just was a little uneducated about the law in this area and thought that, she would only allow dogs with blind people in. And I tried to inform her that, service dogs can be for a variety of people and that she's in training and that kind of stuff. And in the end, I'm definitely not one that wants to, start any sort of drama. So I just said, I'm sorry, that's what you think, but, I'll just find somewhere else that is willing to have our money and our dinner things. And so we found another place and they were fabulous. And in fact, she got to lay on the floor and they brought her water and most places are pretty open about things. But the difference is that she is a true service dog. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are kind of trying to fake the service dog aspect in order to be able to take their pet dogs into places. And, obviously that is a hugely complicated thing because there's a lot of politics involved and that kind of stuff. But, a service dog should be under control and should be quiet. She gets up occasionally during this interview. She's gotten up once or twice, but you haven't heard her at all. She's pretty easily redirected and that kind of stuff. And so if a dog is out of control or nipping at people or those kind of things, it's definitely not a service dog per se.
Right.
So at the restaurant, did you have her work for you while you were there, or do you have her lay there?
For the most part at that point, she's just under the table.
Okay.
Technically, if I dropped something, she should be able to pick it up. I have had her pick up my wallet or if I drop a utensil or anything, but at that point, I'm usually just going to get a new utensil.
Sure.
But she goes with me everywhere I go. So, like, we,
But a
you
big
know,
part of the training is her just being there.
Exactly.
And waiting to be called on to.
And that's really hard for some dogs because, we had one dog who had some great skills, but was super excitable all the time. And just there was no way that he was going to be able to kind of sit in waiting until somebody needed him. And he ended up actually working as a cell phone sniffing dog with the corrections facility because he needed that. He had that drive for that and he needed that kind of a career. So he was one that found a career change.
Cell phone sniffing dog. Wow.
Well, because cell phones are not allowed at the prisons.
Sure.
And they actually, I think they smell the lithium batteries. They can sniff those out. So, if I'm not mistaken, there's something in there. There's some sort of the chemical in there that that they can sniff out and find contraband.
That's amazing. Wow.
So, the organization that you work with, Paws with a Purpose, mainly places dogs with adults. Can you give us some perspective on how the training might be different or what some of the issues may be when you're trying to place a dog with kids?
Sure. Our organization does usually go with adults, but we are not not against placing a dog with kids, but we really focus on the mobility aspect of it versus some of the other ones that might do a little bit more sensory. There are organizations that train dogs to work specifically with kids with autism. A dog can be trained to do heavy work and lay across their lap. Or give them some proprioceptive input that way.
That means giving pressure.
Exactly. And when you have a 50 or 60 or 70 pound dog that lays across your lap and just lets you love on them for a little bit, sometimes that is a very easy way to kind of help calm down. We have some some organizations are doing, they can train for like seeking kids out that are flight risks, you know, that are fleers. And so they can kind of be trained to go find them and bring them back. That's obviously not something that we do, but it is definitely something that is out there. And I think it's an area as the population grows of kids with sensory processing disorders and people are becoming more aware of that, I think that it is an area that people will get into more. Just in general, obviously, you know, dogs are very tactile experience, at, you know, just their soft fur on the outside. But when you're doing treats, a lot of times our kids would get slobber on their hands. that's quite quite interesting for a kid that might have a little bit of defensiveness or might be a little off about having that kind of wet stuff on their hands. But a lot of times if it's motivating enough, it allows them to kind of help work through some of the things. You know, we used Remy over at my last job at primarily for kids with sensory processing disorders and that kind of stuff. And that's why I said heavy work was a great thing.
I love when you said put him in the wagon.
We did.
They would pull him around.
They would pull. They would. And that was something that we
How motivating is that?
That we really had to train for him at the beginning because a wagon is really unstable for a dog. And so we had to kind of work on that. Was one of those grad school kind of things that he didn't. Why would we have taught him to ride in a wagon before that? Mm-hmm. You know, he would have been walking next to his person.
Right.
But instead, that was one of those things that we worked on is getting him to like lay down in the wagon so that the kids could pull him. And he's a 70-pound dog, so that is pretty intensive, heavy work for them. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think that kids benefit from dogs in a lot of ways. I think that if somebody is interested in getting a dog for their child, I would definitely start talking to some organizations. Most of the time, people will have a waiting list. Don't get frustrated about that. Put your name on a couple of lists, and because you never know when something's going to come up. I would start by going to that Assistance Dogs International, because that's a great tool.
That ADI.
And it's a great tool to kind of find who are the very reputable organizations. Not to say that somebody who's not ADI certified is not reputable. We are in our process of getting that certification, but it's pretty intensive. So,
and you said on there they may have, they may get a little bit more specific. For instance, if you needed a dog that helps with low vision or
exactly and you can just search their website. They have a members area that you can search for based on location and what kind of a dog you're looking for.
Great.
So and I would definitely, you know, the biggest thing if you're looking to get a dog is to talk to people in the organization. Follow your gut instinct, you know, about the care of the dog and that kind of stuff. If you feel like because the biggest thing that I think we do so well is following up with our placements. We don't just place the dog and walk away. They come back once a year for retraining or recertification on the public access dogs.
Freedom wants a microphone.
As I say, I'm not sure if she's quite the sullen teenager down there. So, you know, just to make sure you kind of follow your gut on interviewing people and making sure that you understand what they're going to do for you and then what your job is going to do. So if you're getting a service dog for a child, make no whatever about it that the family is going to need to be involved. We will not place with a child unless there is a second adult person that is willing to kind of take the responsibility, because it is a lot of responsibility. And a lot of the times kids have to grow into that. So if we place a dog when they're, you know, 8, 9, it could be 4 or 5 years before they really get things. And until then, mom or dad or both are going to end up having to kind of play the main role in that and really helping make sure that that's a successful relationship.
Right. Well, that's just a ton of great information to start with for anybody who's interested in having a dog, training a dog, and also good information for just citizens of the community. When you see a dog out in the community, if you see Sarah at the grocery store with Freedom, knowing about, you know, the working dog having their vest on, you know, I think it's still kind of surprising. You know, there's always that element of surprise when you see a dog who's working out in the community, and the instinct is to talk to them more or to have your hands on them more because you feel like they're doing a good job. But just, you know, realize that they're working. They're on the clock.
Right. And the big thing is you don't want to distract them, because if they're working with somebody that might have some balance issues, if you were to distract that dog and that dog pulls a different direction, you could make that person fall and cause more of an injury. And so that's what we really work hard on with our dogs, is making sure that they're, you know, as unbreakable as possible with distractions. But it definitely, you know, it's a constant thing, because toddlers are her kryptonite. She's really a fan of toddlers. She, because I think they're just sniffable height, right, you know? Right. And so she's just, I have a nephew who's a year old, and she's like, oh, I love him. I love him. She'll follow him around and lick his head. It's really cute.
We really appreciate you coming in today. That was great.
No problem.
So, Sarah, we ask everybody that comes into the studio the same question at the end, and that is, what gives you your courage to do what you do every day?
My courage I get from being able to see the outcome and knowing that my hard work with this dog is going to pay off in the long run and help somebody be more independent in their life.
Absolutely. Talk about making a difference. Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
It's the Minds in Motion Name That Vestibular Apparatus Show.
We are introducing a new game show segment on the podcast, and it is called Name That Vestibular Apparatus. So what is the vestibular system?
What is that, Lauren?
Well, it is the movement system that helps your body understand where your head is in space when you move. So there's lots of parts that make it up, and it is enclosed in your ear. So we're also going to be including some parts that are surrounding the vestibular system. So what Kara's going to do is give a definition, and then you are going to get some choices, and you're going to need to go to our Facebook page to find out what the correct answer is.
Yes. And the reason for doing this is because we are sharing information with you about Minds in Motion. And Minds in Motion, what they primarily do is strengthen that vestibular system. And that system kind of pours out its information into all the other systems of the body, really, which is sometimes difficult to understand, but that's what they're working on, and we're going to gain some knowledge about the different parts.
Okay, so I'm going to read a definition and then give you some choices. Kara's thinking about this also in the game show of Name That Vestibular Apparatus. So this word is Latin for money bag. It's what helps detect linear motion in the vertical plane. So think about going up and down in an elevator, and also what the force of gravity is feeling like to your body. So is it A, semicircular canal, B, utricle, or C, saccule? Kara, any thoughts?
I do remember from the last episode, we were discussing something that helped you process going in a horizontal line.
Right.
Like riding in the car. This is different.
This is different. This is up and down.
That helps you go up and down.
So
I actually do know the answer, but I will not reveal. You will need to go to our Facebook page for Developing Courage to find out the correct answer. Look it up. Say what you want to say and let the words fall out.
Honestly, I want to see you be brave. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only and should not be construed as therapeutic or medical advice, as your particular situation will vary. If you have concerns, please contact your local healthcare professional. For more information and additional episodes, visit Kara and Lauren online at developingcourage.com. And thanks for listening.